for the first ever running of the All-Star Mile, the world's richest mile race on turf, and the field is set to go. Ready to run, set at Flemington, and they're racing in the All-Star Mile. Mystic Journey over the top takes the lead. She is what dreams are made of. Mystic Journey's won the All-Star Mile and exit a corner. Graf moving up to Sunlight at the clock tower. Sunlight kicks from Graf, followed by Brave Smash in her time, Santa Ana Lane. Still Sunlight with 100 metres to go from Graf. Brave Smash, Osborne Bulls late. It's too late. Sunlight won the new market.
The Autumn Sun. Boy, you'll have to be good to win from there. It's Fundamentalist in front from Vega Days, Nikita Jane. The Autumn Sun is lifting late. Fundamentalist in front. The Autumn Sun's really surging. The outside. Yes. Oh, what a super win. The Autumn Sun got up.
It's Hawkshot grabbed by Mystic Journey, followed by Amphitrite, Ring-a-ding-ding late. Mystic Journey with 100 to go, races away. They're roaring in Tasmania, and Mystic Journey won the guineas easily.
This is RSN 927's Racing Pulse, the heartbeat of Victorian racing. Here's Michael Belgate.
Good morning and welcome to Racing Pulse. It is Wednesday the 20th of March and another big show coming your way. We are continuing our countdown to Gold and Slipper Day and also the William Reid Stakes, the Group 1 Friday night meeting, the final Group 1 night meeting or the final night meeting at Moonee Valley during the summer and also autumn season. And because of that, we're going to get the man who runs Moonee Valley live in the studio after 9 o'clock, Michael Brow. First up, though, we're going to try and find you the winner of the slipper. The barrier draw was conducted yesterday. Bit of a disappointing barrier draw for Dave Eustace and Kieran Maher. Both their runners drawing out wide, but maybe it will be the place to be. We'll find out on Saturday. We'll have a chat to Dave about both Dubious and Loving Gabby. We'll also have a chat to Sam Freeburn, who's hoping to follow in his father and uncle's footsteps and win a golden slipper in his own right with his dad on Saturday as well. Speaking of tough days on Saturday, we're hopeful of talking to Darren Flindell, who's got to call all the Godolphin colours. That'll be a little later in the show. And we'll also maybe catch up with Peter Galagotis. The news with Malik Guerra is not good for Friday night. He will not be taking his place in the William Reid Stakes. Better news, illustrious... the horse that they are running over in Dubai has also landed there and is doing extremely well, illustrious lad. So it's going to be a big show coming up your way. First of all, though, let's have a chat to Sammy Freeman.
Racing Pulse with Michael Felgate.
It's going to be a huge weekend. Not only do they have the reigning Blue Diamond winner looking to go and complete the double in the Golden Slipper, but they've got Shoals in the William Reid Stakes on Friday night. How are you, Sam?
Good day, Michael.
Looking forward to seeing Shoals in action again. How did she come through that first up run behind Trapeze Artist?
Yeah, she's come through it really nicely. She tightened up for the run, and the trip away certainly brought her on. And she ran exactly how we thought she would. She just probably peaked that last 50 to 100 metres, and we're looking forward to her second up.
Has she taken that much improvement? Have you seen much physical improvement in her, and how much more do you think she'll need to improve to beat a horse who's flying like Sunlight?
Yeah, look, she's tightened up for the first up run, definitely, and look, she seems to be going as well as she always is. And look, Sunlight's a pretty incredible animal, and she's going to be tough to beat on Friday night. But we've got a live chance, and hopefully she can put her best foot forward.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And then the plan is to take her back up to Sydney for the TJ?
Yeah, that's it. That's the plan at the moment. So, we'll stick to that. It's it was going to be a month between runs, and we just sort of felt that, getting a run into her. We sort of toyed up whether we were going to trial or a runner in between. And look, third up for the TJ, she should be cherry ripe.
She got a huge weekend. Runners everywhere. No doubt the big feature and the highlight, though, was Liar in the Golden Slipper, the Blue Diamond winner. And just having a look at some statistics, three Blue Diamond winners in the Golden Slipper, it makes tough reading because in the history of the Blue Diamond Golden Slipper, there have been 35 horses try and complete the double and only five have managed to do it, including the Great Sepoy, Kortzer, Bounding Away, Manicato and John's Hope. It's a tough task to complete the double.
Yeah, it is. And look, I guess, she's a horse. She's not aware of history, so we're pretty confident with her. She's come through the Blue Diamond, couldn't have come through it in any better order, and she trialled up exceptionally last week, and her work yesterday on the course proper at Randwick was as good as I've seen from her. And look, we're really happy with her, and you know, it's obviously a whole different ball game on a on what will probably be a bottomless track at Rose Hill, but you know, we're really happy with her.
Is she going better than what she was before the Diamond?
Going as good, if not a touch better. You know, she's just a filly that the more we've been racing her, she's been thriving, and she's really been a product of the system we have in place with Pinecliff and Flemington, and you know, she's relaxed nicely into stables up at Randwick, and you know, the weather's, you know, obviously touch and go, and that's a query with all of them, but look, her condition going into the race seems to be tip top.
What's your gut feel on a wet track?
Look, we think she'll handle it. She's confirmation, she's a little bit back at the knee, and so look, she's trialled in what was probably a softer heavy last week. Luke Curry commented that he thought she loved it. She had galloped yesterday. She seemed to eat up the turf, so we think she'll handle it. It's obviously a different story under race conditions, but yeah, gut feeling she'll get through it.
Your family history in a Golden Slipper is a remarkable one, winning four in a row, Lee Freeman, and your father, Anthony, was pretty much the man behind the man who was in charge of the two-year-olds up in Sydney during that period. You were probably too young to remember it, but have you spoken to your dad about those years and the knack of having these two-year-olds on song on the big day?
Yeah, exactly. With the rich history that the family's got with the race, and you know, it helps, you know, Dad, you know, obviously sort of been there and done that, and you know, he knows what sort of horse it takes to win the race and sort of programming to do so. And so yeah, look, it's going to be an exciting day for the whole stable on Saturday. Just to have a runner in the race is an honour in itself, and to have a live chance, you know, hopefully we can have a really good outcome.
What does he say to you behind closed doors about how good he thinks Lyra is compared to some of those star two-year-olds he's had in the past?
Oh, look, he'd never compare her to, you know, almost like a Lingi or anything like that. He's always got a soft spot for them, so he's quite reserved with his opinion on it. But, look, she just keeps raising the bar, and she's done nothing wrong so far, so hopefully on Saturday she can etch her name into, you know, one of the best in Anthony's eyes.
It looks like one of the most open slippers we've seen in recent years. Can you get a handle on who you think is maybe the hardest to beat?
No, look, I think that Cosmic Force is pretty impressive on Saturday, and obviously got through what was a bottomless track, so that's a massive advantage for them. But there's a whole host of chances. Loving Gabby was obviously very good in the Blue Diamond, and if she gets through the ground, she'd be very competitive. It is very open, and any number of the Godolphin horses, you know, they've all been very impressive. So in terms of comparing to recent years, it seems like probably the most even we've had.
It's going to be a huge day in Sydney. Outside of Lyra in the Slipper, she'll be your only runner-up in Sydney. But I see Ambitious. You had the option of going to the Mornington Cup on Saturday, but you've decided to go to the Albury Cup on the Friday.
Yeah, look, we've had him up in Sydney, and we were going to run him on Saturday, but last Saturday that is. But he's useless in a heavy track, so the options up in Sydney are appearing quite limited at the moment. And the Albury Cup, obviously won it with Tom Melbourne a few years ago. So look, we're trying to get the horse some confidence, and it looks to be a suitable race, and the ground will be good, which will certainly help.
And what about today? You've had probably the best back runner all day, another two-year-old. And I remember when I got you on a few weeks ago, you said you've got about five or six horses which are all two-year-olds for Godolphin. And you've got one or two that may be potentially just as good as Lyra. Is this one of those?
Yeah, look, he's a nice horse. He's got a bit of talent. He's probably heading into today a touch underdone. He's just had the one jump out at Mornington, and look, he's a horse that we've got high hopes for in the future. Whether we see that at two, we'll wait and see, but certainly when he turns three and gets out to a trip over a mile and a quarter, you know, he's going to be a very nice horse.
Well, he's been backed unbeatable. Chenny is a horse we speak of, race three today. He's into even money. Is he a deserving even money pop today?
Oh, look, if he'd had one more trial, I'd say yeah. But just the, you know, the last 100 might be the query, but if he does, it'll be on class. And so, look, I think he should be probably the nicest of them in the race, you know, going forward.
Well, stable's on fire at the moment, and another impressive winner yesterday. I'll leave you with the toughest question at the end. Scholes or Liar? Who are you more confident with in the Group 1s this weekend?
I have to say Liar. I'm quite confident with her.
Ooh, I like that. Good luck, Sam.
Cheers. Thanks, Michael.
From racing's heartland, RSN 927's Racing Pulse.
Well, Dave Eustace has his first runners in the Golden Slipper with his training partner Kieran Maher on Saturday. Yesterday was the barrier draw. It's a great effort to get two-year-olds in the featured two-year-old race in Australia. But yesterday at the barrier draw, I wonder what was going through their mind. Dubious drawing barrier 16 and Loving Gabby drawing barrier 15. They'll come in with emergencies, but two of the widest gates going their way. How are you, Dave?
Good, Michael. How are you?
What was your initial reaction? Could it be a positive with the track, or were you a little bit disappointed?
Oh, you've always got to be positive, but we were a little bit flat, obviously, when they were drawn out. I think if it was a fast track or a good track, you'd be really struggling, but the rain might help, and it might be the place to be to a point, but you'd have loved to be drawn in the middle.
What do you think about a wet track with your two, Loving Gabby and Dubious?
Loving Gabby, in the last couple of weeks, has been on it twice. It seems to have handled extremely well. She trialled very nicely up there. She's a big, scopey filly who I think will probably go on any ground. And she worked on it on Tuesday and worked very strong. And Dubious, possibly a little bit of a query. He's got very clean, flat action and has clearly ran very well on fast ground, but worked well Tuesday. You never know until you let the heads go. To the 2 year-olds when it's very deep, but we can only hope.
What are you thinking, initial ideas, re those barriers and where they'll be in the run? Loving Gabby, we know, has got back in her races, finds her feet, but she was up on speed in a recent trial, and Dubious has shown pace in his career so far.
Yeah, I think you've got to keep an open mind when ground's like this and just see how the track's playing, and get a, you know, a fair bit of feedback from the jockeys as well. It's generally a very high-pressure race. If you're asking two-year-olds to push forward on that ground and have them out of their comfort zone, they're more than likely not to finish off. So we don't want to be last, obviously. But as you say, I think Loving Gabby, she was back, but I don't think that was by design. That was just being a bit new to it all. First couple of starts, I think she might be able to take a more forward position now that she's got a bit more experience. So, as I say, it'll be a case of keeping a very open mind until race time.
She almost looks the more untapped and the more raw of your two-year-olds. Has she taken much improvement from the Blue Diamond? Do you think she's a better horse now?
Definitely. I think they both are. They're still, you know, two-year-olds. They're still developing. So is Dubious. It was a really good return from him, and it's only going to improve. He was a bit round that last start, and she, yeah, undoubtedly physically has come on, and I think her recent trial and her work has showed that.
Gee, it's open, isn't it? Can you get any idea where you think the main dangers will come from?
I think that the now favourite, proven on that sort of ground, is a big sighter, particularly with 2 year-olds, and he obviously respect Peter and Paul's record with 2 year-olds and in the race. So 2 year-olds just coming to hand at the right time is all important. So I think Cosmic Force is going to take a big hand, and I think he's probably the one to beat.
If you won on Saturday, what would it mean to you? It's been a meteoric rise from when you first came out here to Australia.
Yeah, it would obviously be it'd be massive, just for the whole team and for the progression of the stable the last few years. You know, it's been a big change the last couple of years, doubled if not tripled in size. And a lot of people have been a part of that. So just a whole collective. It's the sort of race that you're working towards, and Hopefully it can be done on Saturday.
Outside of the Slipper, you've got a lot of horses nominated on Saturday. How many will you be running in the big races in the Randvet? You've got Night's Watch, Mask of Time and Yogi nominated. Yogi's also nominated in the Mannion Cup. Which way will they be heading?
Randvet. Night's Watch runs in the Randvet. We're really quite confident he's bang on. He's taken a little bit of time to get fit. And his work last Saturday and yesterday morning was really impressive.
He loves wet.
We're going to put a one-eyed blinker on him as well because he can just hang in his races, and that seems to really straighten him out in his work. So we're confident he's spot on and can take a hand. And Big Blue will run in the Mannion. His form up there in the wet is very good. He's going to have an interesting campaign. He's going to lift the Sydney Cup, and then he'll be running over the sticks at Warrnambool. So,
I wonder if we've had a Sydney Cup winner at Warrnambool before.
Yeah, I don't think that would have happened, but that's the plan with him. So they're the two outside of the Slipper that we think will take a hand.
And Yulong January, another one who's shown a liking for the wet.
Yeah, he's got a really good record up there and on the wet. As you say, really disappointing camera. We really put a finger on it. Just might have sharpened up a bit. His run over 12 with Zusein behind him was very strong. So we're dropping back to 12 on ground we know he likes. Hopefully that makes a difference.
Got some big racing in Victoria as well. We got the Friday night meeting, the culmination of the night carnival, and the Group 1 William Reid. You've got two entered, Bonzaway and Voodoo Lad. Now, you've decided not to go there with Bonzaway. What's any decision on Voodoo?
Not as yet. We're actually just working that out over the next 40-45 minutes and tracking the acceptances.
All right. Who will you be running on Friday night, and who do you think's your best
Friday
chance?
Night, Nantali and Kanedna run in the Sun line. Nantali's obviously flying, and we'll take her hand. She's got a good record at the Valley. She's probably our best chance of the night. And we run two nice fillies in the Alexandra Stakes, Itana and the Closer. And I think Itana's probably the best of those. She was a big run the other day at Flemington, was caught wide and was still able to run through the line. She's got quite a big future, we think. So if she draws a marble, she'll run a big race in that.
Good day at Mornington on Saturday as well. You've got the Mornington Cup winning. You're into the Caulfield Cup and also the Hariba Stakes. Who are you going to run in the Mornington Cup?
Gardini runs the Mornington Cup. He's on a jumps campaign, run over a mile and a half. He's going to bring his fitness on. He's probably not winning the race, but as I say, it's stepping stone towards him having a career over hurdles and fences.
And anything in the Hariba?
Yeah, Bonzaway runs in the river. It's going well. It's a race that he can definitely win. I hear Manuel's going there. He's obviously a good horse and being aimed at the All A's and a Group 1 winner, so he's not really easy to beat. But it's a race that could set up nicely for him. And he's down in grade, which will suit.
And you've got a couple of runners today. Can you leave us with a winner today for the listeners?
Gypsy Flyer, she's very well bred. She's a full sister to Invincible Star. She's had her issues, and I would have said she'd need a run because she's taken a bit of time, but a bit green, but it doesn't look a strong race. So if she does a few things right, then she can win.
And you got Jazz Star a little later in the afternoon at Ladbrokes Park, 2 from 4.
Yeah, she's obviously looks reasonably progressive and found the right race. She's up in grade a little bit, but she can run well.
Dave, huge few days for yourself and Kieran. Best of luck in the Slipper especially.
Cheers, thanks Michael.
Dave Eustace, Matty Stewart, racing editor at RSN, joins us. It is such an open and intriguing Slipper this year. Even with the barrier draw now, a lot of the fancied runners drawing wide. Cosmic Force has drawn what appears to be a nice barrier on paper, but The biggest question is, what will the track be? What's your update today on the weather watch in Sydney?
Yeah, had a chat to Lindsay Murphy. They just a little niggle from the last time I spoke to him. They had 8.5 mils during the barrier draw. Like the weather gods were saying, oh, have a look at this. So maybe he said yesterday, maybe soft 7. He's now thinking more like heavy 8. But not a bog, but certainly just a little bit softer than they maybe thought yesterday. And the radar's a bit, and you wouldn't believe it, Manny, this is Lindsay Murphy, the radar's broken. I can't check the radar. It's busted. So they're going to resurrect the radar and have a look at that. But he said it wasn't bleak. So, look, you're going to get a heavy 8, basically.
Yeah, and we'll have the group ones. There's 5 group ones on Saturday. We'll bring you those final fields when they come through. And the slipper will probably be around about the third last or second last race. There's going to be a lot of horses on the track by the time we get to the slipper. They'll be scouting wide. There's no doubt about that. Now, you followed up an interesting tweet that I think was put out by Dan O'Sullivan yesterday on the form of the Darren Weir horses. And if Weir was still training, this could be potentially one of his biggest paydays, but he's going to be sitting back watching his horses racing for a lot of money on the weekend.
Corralling some cattle up at Malden. And, that was the Daniel O'Sullivan's put out a really interesting stat about the Weir horses as we approach the 50-day anniversary of them having left the stable. And this is about 600 horses dispersed all over the place. And I think the initial fear was from some was what they might all collapse. Who knows what was the regime going on there, and they might all lose form. But and this pertains to Yes, the Golden Slipper favourite as well, is that most of the Weir horses have either retained their Weir performance levels. One or two have had spikes. I think 50 Stars was one. Yes was another. Brave Smash, even though he hasn't been winning, has actually improved a little bit since leaving the stable. One or two, like Extra Brute, have actually gone backwards a bit, but with legitimate reasons. So, obviously Darren Weir is paying a big penalty for a major blue. And by all reports, he's been very stoic and hasn't been looking back and you know, getting his cattle organised on his farm and biding his time. But I think at 4:30 on Saturday, the one of them is going to sting. I think it'll be yes, because he never had any great success with two-year-olds. Never had I think he might have had one or two at most Golden Slipper runners. And there's a little deal with Coolmore that would have put a bit of whippy in his kick over $1 million had it won. And Chris Wallace had the horse for 5 minutes and might get a massive whack out of that. So, yeah, interesting situation with the ex-Weir horses for sure.
And their former, as you said, they haven't lost a bit. But I remember Peter Moody saying at one of the Saturday OBs that it may be the next campaign that is the biggest tester about the form line with the ex-Weir horses. Tell us about the article that you followed up. And what about the fairy tale finish for Heath Connors? He should retire every second week, come back, train, and announce his retirement because he wins the
or
last.
Or at least announce it. Yeah. Don't do it. Just announce it.
And he gave
Neurotic
no hope when we spoke to him. Home at sales at $10. So, once again, well done to Heath Connors. The fairy tale result. The last two horses he settles up wins at headquarters at Flemington and then yesterday as well at Bendigo. It's shining a light on the state of trainers. And I know you wrote an article yesterday with Andrew Nicol. There's been a lot of, talk and debate from that article.
There has. It's sort of struck a real chord amongst trainers. And I think there is an interesting contradiction in racing at the moment where the coffers are full but the trainers aren't getting much of it. So certainly a particular bracket of trainers. And now it comes down to from alerting people to this discrepancy with trainers. There is that large group who are just simply not making a living out of it, and Heath Connors was very much part of that category. And what do you do? And one of the suggestions is a working party jointly between Racing Victoria and the ATA. Now moving on to the distribution issue of prize money. Is it being distributed properly? And there's even a suggestion of it's a bit like Japanese racing in a way, where they've got the secondary, first and secondary, groups of horses, competitors, and whether or not you can identify the battlers, the ones who are struggling the most, who are still, you know, paying all the costs and all that sort of stuff, whether there is a circuit within a circuit where these horses could compete with prize money and not be penetrated by those mega stables who just come sweep through those traditional.
So who's suggesting this?
Andrew Nicol has brought this up as part of an ongoing discussion with Racing Victoria about whether there could be
a separate circuit.
Identify a certain group of trainers and their horses and whether they could be protected from other stables coming into that circuit and running in those races. Oh, it's a very loose idea at
sounds
the moment. It's
a working party. So these ideas will work,
and it's worked internationally in other jurisdictions.
Well, okay. I think the biggest aspect is trying to support them, and I don't know whether the industry can try to subsidise some of the costs that trainers have, not just the small-time trainers, but all trainers, whether it's their training fees, the feed, which is continuing to go up, this future fund that racing has, the extreme prize money that racing has, even the extreme amount of money that the breeders have. Maybe there needs to be some sort of subsidisation or something like that. But, I mean, smarter people than you and I will work that out. But it is worth discussing as this working party, which is good to hear anyway.
Well, the theme is grassroots, and there's been a lot of talk from trainers that they need more money into grassroots racing, but Andrew Nichols says he only partly agrees with that. There is an average $35,000 per race across 187 race meetings annually, so that's a pretty high benchmark, but the ongoing issue is the battlers aren't winning it.
And that's right. And again, it's the, as you say, the bigger trainers, because the prize money is so good, they're taking horses everywhere to scoop up that prize money.
I think the analogy might be the secondary and second and third tier golf and tennis tournaments, whether you could identify a certain bracket and in some way assist them more directly. And as you say, it sounds loose and flimsy, but there is certainly a group that they are identifying, and how do we help this group?
Certainly an interesting discussion. Anyway, Matty Stewart, all your articles will be up on the RSN website as well.
This is exclusive access into the heart of racing. The Racing Pulse Inner Sanctum.
And it is great to have in the Inner Sanctum Michael Brow, the boss of Moonee Valley, because Friday night's a big night. It is the finale of the night racing season, and it ends with a bang. The Group 1 William Reid Stakes. How are you, Michael?
Great to be here, Michael.
You're looking nice and refreshed.
Tanned, yeah. Just back from 10 days in the States, so... had a fantastic time looking at some of the great new sporting stadiums down in Atlanta, and enjoyed being the guest of the PGA down at the Players' Championship in Florida. So a great trip, and let's put it down as research.
Yes, absolutely. Now, before we get to the research part, what courses did you manage to get a hit on?
I only played Pablo Creek, which is 5 minutes from Sawgrass. I had the clubs there in case I had the opportunity to play the famous 17th, the little island green there, but that didn't come up. But had a fantastic trip. But with the Moonee Valley Racing Club, we secured the hospitality rights to the President's Cup out at Royal Melbourne this December. So great opportunity to get across to Florida, meet up with all the key PGA people to see how they deliver their benchmark event in the Players' Championship.
It's a great partnership, and I know the race clubs are now looking for alternate avenues of revenue. It can't be solely reliant on the wagering dollar.
Correct.
And also membership attendances and patronage through the gates. And that's what Moonee Valley Racing Club's doing with this, I suppose, initiative that you announced really in the spring.
Yeah, it's a great partnership to be able to join forces with the PGA. We delivered the World Cup of Golf at Metropolitan last November, but that was just a practice run, if you like. And they're tipping 30,000 to 40,000 people each day out at Royal Melbourne for the President's Cup. It'll be the biggest golfing tournament in the world this year. Tiger Woods, of course, captaining the American team, and Ernie Els captaining the international team. So it's a feather in the cap for the Valley to win that contract, and looking forward to delivering an outstanding event this December.
Well, infrastructure-wise, over there obviously looking because of the big new redevelopment at Moonee Valley. Did you learn anything? Is there anything that you'll implement in the new Moonee Valley building?
Yeah, we had an opportunity to head down to Atlanta. They've just done three major sporting stadiums. They've built a brand new baseball park, a $600 million investment, but with that they've got 700 apartments, retail and commercial, in a standalone precinct. So that's similar to what we're looking to do with the redevelopment out at the Valley. They've just spent $200 million on an upgrade to their basketball stadium, but they own significant land between it and Mercedes-Benz Stadium, so they're looking at apartment towers and retail and commercial as well. And the highlight, of course, was Mercedes-Benz Stadium, where they played the Super Bowl last month, an investment of $1.6 billion, and we were there on game day, the Atlanta United soccer team won the premiership in their second year last year, and they unfurled the flag, and 78,000 people there. The atmosphere was incredible. But to see how the facilities development has progressed across in America, that gives us an opportunity to bring some of that and implement that into the new grandstand we're planning at the Valley.
And is the timeline still on target for the start of the redevelopment and hopefully the finish of it?
Yeah, it is. So the challenge at the moment, of course, is a softening property market, but we're set to hit the button on the sales program for the townhouse product. We're just crossing the T's and dotting the I's there with a contract with the builder. We expect to be in market shortly on that. But the plan still is that the last race meeting at Moonee Valley will be the 2024 Cox Plate. We'll close down then for a period of 18 months and rebuild a new track and grandstand from there.
This weekend, a little bit closer to home, Friday night, the final night meeting of the season and the Group 1. Now, have you got the final field for the Group 1, the William Reid?
Hot off the press. So the Keogh Holmes William Reid Stakes, $500,000 Group 1 over 1,200. In alphabetical order, we've got 11 runners. Battle Hero, Champagne Cuddles, Dothraki, Alakazoom, Embrace Me, Foul Swoop, Shoals, Sprite, Sunlight, Voodoo Lad and Written By. So a very competitive field there. I'd expect Sunlight's going to come up a pretty short favourite there after her fantastic win in the Newmarket Handicap a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, no doubt about that. We'll bring you the barriers as soon as they come through as well, and it'll be intriguing with Written By also coming back into the Group 1 William Reid on Friday night. You must be very happy with the night series once again. It seems to get stronger and stronger each and every year.
It's been a fantastic season. So 17 meetings in the night racing season for the Valley this year. Of course, we kick off on grand final eve with the big Group 1 Moya over the 1,000 metres there, and Vidora notched up another Group 1 sprint winner at the Valley with that. Really keen to see how she steps out in Dubai Saturday week. I think she'd be a big chance in that race. And, of course, we came through then for the Manikato Stakes, so we had almost 14,000 people there as part of a record two-day Cox Plate Carnival attendance of more than 51,000, and Brave Smash won a very competitive Manikato Stakes. And, of course, the third of the Group 1s is this Friday night, but it's been a fantastic season. Attendance has been strong, wagering up more than 16%. Really happy with how it's developing.
Yeah, and I think it's developed a bit of a cult following too. The Friday nights, no football on, and I've got no doubt the best coverage at racing.com do of any race meeting, whether it's even the Saturdays, is the Friday night, from the talent they've got on camera to the fun that they have and getting the information across. And I think that's what people, it resonates so well with.
Oh, it's grown an audience for sure. And the team at racing.com, led by Jason Richardson, have done a fantastic job in bringing that to life and having that dedicated 4-hour telecast where there's no interruptions, and they can, it's the narrative, it's the personalities that they can showcase with that, and it has developed a cult following.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that at all. Just talking about the racing at the moment, I want to talk more about Moonee Valley as well, but Matty Stewart was just in here talking about the trainers and how we are getting some of them squeezed out, the Heath Connors situation. Have you, as a racing administrator, got any viewpoint on that? There's a working party that's going to be talking about this issue, but it's a very big issue, it's a very important issue, but it seems like it's a difficult one to try and find an answer to.
Yeah, I guess when you have 850 licensed trainers here in Victoria, it's going to be hard for them all to make a living. As we know, there's not a lot of money to be made out of training fees, and you see the distribution of prize money, it is heavily skewed towards those top 5 or top 10 trainers. So the conversation certainly needs to be had, but yeah, we've seen it evolve in recent times now to enable training partnerships. There's obviously an opportunity for those great horsemen there that are struggling to make it on their own to team up with another trainer. And it might be a case of 1 + 1 = 3. If they can combine their skills and complement each other, they can build a solid business. But sustainability is a concern there. You see it in the jockey ranks as well, heavily skewed towards the best jockeys making the lion's share of the money with that. I just heard Matt talking about a potential second circuit, if you like. I'm not sure that that's the right solution. You don't want restraints on trade with that. At the end of the day, trainers are training for owners.
That's it.
You've got to make sure that owners have the best opportunity to make a return on the significant investment they put into the sport. And I wouldn't want to see a situation where you've got a defined two-tier system. saying that, it does work in Japan, where you've got the JRA and the NRA, but it's a very different model, where I think the maximum number of boxes a trainer's allocated is 60. The maximum number of horses they'd have on a 60-box license would be 100. So it's one that we need to consider carefully, but I'm not sure that trying to pull the good trainers or the most successful trainers back to the field is the right solution.
Yeah, it's one that there's going to be a lot of discussion, a lot of debate on, and the one thing that does keep coming back, and it's a very hard thing for those involved because it's their passion, it's their love, their livelihood, that there probably are too many trainers and that the pie does not feed everyone.
Yeah, I grew up in a training family, and yeah, my father worked full time, and he trained a small team as a hobby. I had an uncle that was a full time trainer, very successful through the Northern District, and he had a couple of star horses when I was growing up. But it's one that, yeah, you know, it's no different now than what it was 50 years ago. And when you've got 850 trainers, it's hard to cut the pie so that everybody gets a fair share.
You were away for the inaugural running of the All-Star Mile. You're a shareholder in this great race. It'll be run at Moonee Valley in a couple of years' time. Where did you watch it?
In a hotel room in Florida at 2 a.m. in the morning. So tuned into that, and it was the right result, I think. And congratulations to Adam Trinder and the team there behind Mystic Journey. Of course, we saw her at the Valley on Cox Plate Day last year with a great win. The potential in her is enormous, and to get that big win under her belt on the back of her Australian Guineas win sets it up for what should be a great spring for her. But to see her sit three wide and then power away from some very good horses, yeah, she's a star in the making.
Oh, absolutely. What was your overall, view once it was all said and done on the concept itself and how it was put together and performed?
I think if you have a look at it first year in, if you were to mark the card, you'd say it's a great success. It was delivered quickly. I think it was signed off in November from memory, and all credit to Racing Victoria and the VRC to work collaboratively to bring it to life in a very short space of time. So I think we can sit down over the next few weeks and do a review of the concept. I'm sure that there's some opportunities to tweak it so that we can continue to improve it. But I liken the concept that it'll be split across the three tracks, and you saw how Flemington delivered it on Saturday. Look forward to seeing how Caulfield want to bring it to life next year, and then we can do something different with it under lights at the Valley in March 2021.
And that date will be the same date for all clubs on the Saturday that's just gone?
Yeah, or we'll do it on the Friday.
On the Friday, sorry.
Yeah, so it'll be that mid weekend there, or the weekend after the long weekend. So for us, we'd incorporate it into the race meeting we had last week with the Alistair Clark Stakes.
Yes, okay. And the tweaks, there's been a lot of talk about tweaking the wild card, the voting, whether it's prize money or the rating. I'd imagine as a shareholder that you would sit down and be involved in conversations about next year's parameters?
Yeah, of course. And you know, whether or not we need to look at the baseline benchmark, whether 70 is high enough, whether it needs to go to 80 or even higher. I'm not sure that one of the measures of success on this needs to be how many nominations we get. We had 130 nominations, I think, in the end with that. So you'd like to keep it to 50. I'd like to keep it to 50 genuine horses, and whether you had a two-tiered voting model where you culled it down to, say, the top 25 or the top 30, and yeah, the voters had a second chance to do it. But let's sit down and have the conversation. I think when you look at the wagering numbers that came through, the punters certainly embraced it. It didn't matter that there was three or four horses that were 200-1. To see $65-odd million across the whole meeting's a fantastic result for the industry.
Well, it was a staggering increase, up 51.6% higher than the corresponding Blamey Stakes meeting last year, which, of course, there are a lot smaller fields last year, but that is probably, once again, contributed to by the fact that you've put the new race and the race day on around that.
Yeah.
So a 50% increase in turnover year on year is quite staggering,
yeah,
really.
I wouldn't necessarily just focus on that 50% increase and do the comparisons with the Blamey Stakes meeting last year. I think what you need to do is look at the other two feature autumn meetings we have here in Victoria, Blue Diamond Stakes Day at Caulfield and Super Saturday at Flemington, and they're all around that mid-60s in wagering turnover. And across those other two meetings, you've got the multiple Group 1 races. Of course, the All-Star Mile doesn't carry any black type at this stage, but I think to achieve $65 million is a fantastic first off achievement.
Attendances released yesterday also said that throughout the Festival of Racing, they were up 25%. The attendance for All-Star Mile Day was, I think it was just under 17,000 or just over 16,000. Are you happy with that, or do you think we should be getting more than that to the track?
Oh, you'd like to break through the 20,000 mark, and there was certainly enough marketing behind it to generate a higher attendance than that. But it's hard to launch these events first year in. I don't think there was massive ticket giveaways to build that or seed that crowd, if you like. And also two Grand Prix weekend in Melbourne, there's plenty happening. So we probably need to take that into consideration, that the sports fan gets spread thin and wide on a day like that.
You mentioned Mystic Journey. She could be at Moonee Valley come October as well. Adam Trinder has already said that is the race we want to focus on, the Cox Plate. Unfortunately, we won't get to see the Mighty Mare Winx, even though I've got no doubt she could go back and make it five in a row. But it is a new dawn, a new era, and will that almost be a new regeneration of excitement for this year's Cox Plate?
Yeah, of course. It'll be the 99th running of the Cox Plate, and every year there's a great story. We've absolutely loved the last 4 years with Winx and what that's delivered. It's been an incredible time to be associated with the race and the club, and even the broader benefit across the racing industry. So looking forward to seeing Winx this Saturday, and then I'm sure there'll be a big Victorian contingent heading up to Sydney on Queen Elizabeth Stakes Day for what should be her farewell. But until they come out and say 100% she's retiring there.
So you're telling me there's a chance?
If there's a chance. when I see Debbie and Peter and Chris up there on Queen Elizabeth Stakes Day, I'll just plant that seed. And you never make a decision on race day, but I think if they will retire her, the announcement would come after this Saturday.
They'd want the build-up.
They'd want the build-up. So I'm sure the ATC will put on a spectacular show, whether it is her last run or not. And you'd expect that Randwick should be chock-a-block full for what would be a very special occasion.
There's no doubt about that. Have you started to make calls, though, to connections of horses who could be potential Cox Plate runners? Have you spoken to Bob Peters about Acadia Queen and got his intentions?
Conversations are ongoing. Bob, of course, made the statement after her great campaign that because of the Regimate issue that his preference would be not to come to Victoria. We'd like to think we can get that resolved. I think he said that he'd be focusing her campaign towards a Golden Eagle in Sydney instead. But we'll go through now as we get through the Autumn Carnival, and the dialogue will continue with all these key domestic but also the international horses. The key international meetings are kicking off. We saw the Hong Kong Derby last weekend. We've got Dubai next Saturday. As that progresses, as we start to construct what should be a high-calibre field for the 2019 Ladbrokes Cox Plate.
Just on the Golden Eagle, has that been a source of frustration for yourself a week after a $7 million race focused on the four-year-olds?
It is what it is. And I think the challenge they have up in Sydney is to extend their carnival out for another month or so. It's interesting that they've elected to put the big money behind these new races, and one of the key races in Sydney, like the Epsom Handicap, doesn't seem to get the prize money it deserves. So I'd be keen to see how they can spread their investment, particularly across marketing, to try and attract a crowd through a prolonged period. Let's see if it's successful. We'll just focus on what we need to do to make sure we put on a spectacular Cox Plate Carnival.
Have we worked out how these huge prize money races are being funded in New South Wales?
Oh, it comes out of the coffers of head office, I think. So there was talk, I think, when they announced it back in December that there was a new funding stream coming through. I don't know if that was a new bet type. Oh, I haven't heard any more on that. But, I think all PRAs have had the benefit of the increase in wagering and joint venture revenues and race field fees. Yeah, we've got different approaches on how we spread that across the industry with prize money. And Racing New South Wales is elected to put on a mega race with the Everest. Now, half of that's funded, of course, through slot holders, but half of it's funded through the industry, and then, of course, a $7 million Golden Eagle race. So it's up to them to work out how they allocate their prize money.
We've got the final field, which you've announced, and the barriers have just come through onto my desk for the William Reid Stakes. So the order of the race and barriers, We're just missing number one here. We might try and get that back, but I've got number two, Voodoo Lad, barrier seven. Number three, Dothraki, number four. Barrier four, I should say. Number four, Battle Hero, barrier two. Number five, Shoals is in barrier five. Champagne Cuddles, 10. Sprite, 6. Elikazoom, 1. Written by 8. Sunlight, 11. And Embrace Me, barrier number three. Now, have I missed one out there? The press release I've got here just starts from 2 to 11.
Which ones I was trying
to... Voodoo Lad, Dothraki, Battle Hero, Shoals, Champagne Cuddles, Sprite, Elikazoom, written by Sunlight, Embrace Me.
Did you say Sprite there?
Yes. Sprite's in there, barrier six. All right, well...
We'll work that out.
But anyway, that's a little confusing. But they are the barriers. Sunlight has drawn the extreme outside, barrier 11. Shoals has drawn 5. So...
I think they'll be disappointed with that with Sunlight because she drew in the Manicato.
That's right.
Got caught on the rail.
It'll be interesting, though. So that will be a very tactical race on Friday night. After the last night meeting, do we go into refurb mode at Moonee Valley in the build-up?
Number one, just on that, Fell Swoop, did you have him?
No, Fell Swoop's the one, barrier nine.
Fell Swoop, barrier nine.
There we go.
So field of 11. So we've got an extended break this year. We have a hiatus after we get past Friday night, and we don't return to racing until early August. So we're undertaking a significant refurbishment of the track to bring it up to a standard which will get us through until the redevelopment. We've done renovations we do it every second year and try and get back in June, and it's always a bit of a challenge to have the track at its best for those winter meetings. So we've made the call to have an extended break, give the track every chance to come back and be in fantastic condition as we kick off the new season in August.
Yeah, well, it's going to be a massive build-up to the 99th running of the Ladbrokes Cox Plate. And get in early. That's the story, isn't it? Because you can book now for the Cox Plate.
We're on sale next month, so we're just finalising all the packages at the moment, and we look forward to launching that. We do that late April. Members, of course, have priority, and then we open it up to the general public. But we've had two sellouts with the Cox Plate the last 2 years on the back of Winx, and keen to make sure that we can carry that momentum through as we celebrate the 99th Cox Plate this year, and then look forward to a massive build-up to Cox Plate 100 in October 2020.
And Friday night, you'll have the footy on the big screens. Get out there to Moonee Valley. If you haven't been out to the night meetings, it is fabulous fun. The weather's holding up really well this week as well. So for those who want to get trackside, other than the hot action on the track, what else is there?
Yeah, certainly come out, although you don't feel it today with the weather out there. 30 degrees, I think they're tipping for tomorrow. That'll blend into a beautiful night at the Valley. Plenty of entertainment on course. We've got the music, food trucks coming through. Being the last race meeting for the season, there'll be an opportunity to walk the famous Moonee Valley straight after the last race. We'll have giveaways from the barriers there that'll go down the home straight after the last race. And, of course, it's the final heat of the Ladbrokes 55-second challenge. So a young trainer, Logan McGill, he's got a nervous wait to see if his time of 54.77 holds up with written choice. So it'll be fantastic for Logan kicking off his training career if he can be banking a $55,000 check come Monday morning.
That would be a huge result for him. As you said, that would be an unbelievable kickstart to his career. So that's going to be the added excitement. You'll get to see all the action on racing.com. And as I said earlier, I gave it a good pump up the Friday night coverage, but it'll be a little bit different this Friday night. No David Gately there. The news yesterday, he's left.com to go to Sky, which he's been no doubt a great part of the Friday night coverage.
And he's been a great member of the Racing.com team and TVN before that. He's a bit of a quirky character. He's a little bit eccentric, but he's been fantastic for us. He's been fantastic for the Victorian racing industry, a great ambassador for our sport, and I wish him all the best as he moves across the sky.
And a new young gun slips into the saddle, Benny Ascari, who is very astute. He will be on Friday night's coverage with Jason Richardson as well. Just a quick one on Gately too. We had David on yesterday, and it was nice of him to come on there, but there was a little bit of confusion about David telling Racing.com on air. I can categorically say that is not the case. He did tell Racing.com prior to coming on air. We wouldn't have done that here on RSN 927 if that had been the case, and David Gately would not have done that either, personally making an announcement saying that he was leaving the company on air. That was conveyed to them before he did come on air. So I just want to clear that up. Michael, great to see you back, looking fresh and relaxed. Can't wait until Friday night for the great William Reid Stakes meeting out there. And then we count down to the 99th Cox Plate, and I still like how you are saying there is a chance the Mighty Mare may be there.
As small as it might be, let's keep our fingers crossed.
Good on you, Michael. Michael Brower, the CEO of the Moonee Valley Racing Club. The man behind the microphone, Darren Flindell, has a big day indeed, because as we've seen in Melbourne Cups in previous years with Lloyd Williams, this year's Golden Slipper, Godolphin, have seven runners in the race, or six at the moment, including the first emergency. And it could be a wet day, it could be a dreary day, it could be a heavy track, and that all means it's going to be a difficult call for Darren Flindell, who joins me this morning. How are you, Darren?
Yes, all good, Michael. I'm glad you're enjoying all of this.
Well, we don't want to put the pressure on. The weather, though, hopefully not looking too bad for Saturday, or what are you expecting?
It looks like we might be over the worst of it with the weather. There could be still more to come later in the week, but I don't think we'll be dealing with the track as heavy as it was a few years ago when She Will Reign was successful.
Now, it's a big weekend for you, not just on the track, but off it as well, isn't it?
Yes, yes. A number I've been dreading for a number of years is going to pop up this weekend, the day after the slipper, so this will be my last slipper in my 40s.
Big 5-0 on the Sunday. Well, what a birthday present Godolphin have handed you anyway. Now, I'm going to get your thoughts on the slipper, but first of all, we are a few days away, but I want to test you to see how well you're preparing, because I believe Godolphin even rang you up and said, do you want to nominate the last couple of horses, what colour caps they should wear? Is that correct?
Yeah, I actually got a call about this time yesterday from Will from Godolphin, and I said, well, I'm not really sure. I'm just more than happy to go with what you guys have, because they were sort of discussing the pink and orange and a green. So, but all of that's fine. Although having green on a racetrack's not preferable, but that's their problem, not mine.
All right. Well, I'm going to put you to the test. I'm going to name a colour. You tell me the horse. Yellow.
Kiyomichi.
Correct. Black.
Pinsec.
Correct. Red?
Kenley.
Purple?
Not available.
Oh, you're too good, you are. White? Who's got
I'll
white?
White, liar.
Liar. Pink?
Pink is Bivouac.
Green?
And Green Exhilarates.
And the blue one?
Microphone.
Well done. Well done. And we're a few days out as well. Now, I've spoken to Matty Hill about this as well, but your recall, how long would it take you to get that embedded in the brain?
Well, I'd like to think that that's already sort of locked away now. So I don't think it'll be a big issue on the day, but other factors can come up. I mean, I've also got to deal with the three Aquas runners as well.
Correct.
So that's going to be another distraction. And so we're talking about six Godolphin, then three. That's nine out of the 16. It can be concentration zapping as far as the other runners are concerned, but at least as far as the rest of the field is concerned, they've all got their unique colours with Yes, 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 Time to Rain and the Derby, Cosmic Force, the China Horse Club, the Hayes Runner Lankan Star. So they're all individual colours that won't present a problem. So hopefully everything will be fine.
And just like what Matt Hill has to deal with on Melbourne Cup Day, you've got to worry about the undercard, which is one of the best undercards we have ever seen, with the likes of Winx, the Autumn Sun, five Group 1s as well. So you can't focus solely on just the one race.
Absolutely. It's one of those champagne days of racing when you finish with one Group 1 and you think, you beauty, now an even better race is about to come up.
What about Winx for you? You've got two cracks left at it. Does the pressure build?
I think that the pressure will be more on Queen Elizabeth Day for Winx. I think because we've got so much happening on Saturday and this is her second last appearance, it's going to be a great affair with the last appearance there at Rose Hill on her home training track. And I guess we're not going to appreciate all of this until it's over, and it's getting scarily close, just how close to the end we are now.
Have you already started to think of that final day? Matt Hill was talking about the fourth Cox Plate, and Greg Miles has famously spoken about Maccabi Diva's third Melbourne Cup, and Bruce McAmoney saying, well, you must have a line. Have you started to think about a line?
I've thought about a few lines, but I guess sometimes you decide closer to the event, no, I'll work with something else. But I'll worry more about that in the week leading up to the race.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Leave us with the winner of the slipper. It looks like one of the most open we've seen. Who do you like at this stage?
Well, I think it's only natural that the race caller must hit microphone, isn't it?
Very good.
Seriously, I do like it for the fact that with the gate that it's drawn, it should be in the best position of every runner in the race, and that's what I want to look for here. I think microphone can just sit leaders back, and there's going to be plenty of options from there.
Yeah, you may well be right. Darren,
and a lot of the slipper winners in recent years on wet tracks have come right up the fence as well.
It's an interesting quirk, isn't it? Because a lot of people are trying to console themselves who have drawn wide that that may be the place to be. But by that stage of the day when the slippers run, it can tend to head back to the fence.
Very much so. And, well, we've got to go with the historical patterns of the track on when it's been rain affected.
Darren, great to chat, mate. I'll see you there on Saturday, and good luck, good calling, and enjoy your 50th as well.
Yes, thank you so much.
Darren Flindell, he's already got them down pat, the Godolphin runners and their coloured caps, and it is going to be a great Golden Slipper and the undercard as well on Saturday at Rose Hill. Time to have a chat to Peter Galagotis. Now, unfortunately, we didn't get to see Malaguera in the final acceptances for the William Reid Stakes because he's had a little setback. Pete, how are you?
Yeah, I'm very well, Michael. How are you?
I'm good. What's the issue with Malaguera?
He's got a cold, unfortunately, and we've had to just park him up to let him get over it. He was scoped yesterday, and there's a bit of mucus down his airway, and he's not right, so he won't be taking his place.
Oh, that's so disappointing because, gee, it looked a nice race for him too, didn't it?
Yeah, it's unfortunate, but what do? You know, nature takes its course and you've just got to deal with it accordingly, and it's unfortunate because, you know, it's been a fair bit of prep going to this race, and on the back of his last start, we're quietly confident that he's going to be competitive.
Well, you got him back to his best last start, so... that must have given you confidence that there's still a bit of petrol left in the old boy yet.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's just a matter of tweaking a few screws here and there. My late father had a saying, you know, the old carpet can still shine the best at times. So, you know, it's just a matter of putting your polish on it and getting the right circumstances. And he ran well. It was a big run.
Well, it's a big couple of weeks for you because you're back to Dubai and now you're staying home, I believe. You've delegated duties, have you?
Look, my problem's going to be that I'm going to have three runners on that day here in Australia, two of them interstate, one in Adelaide, Miss 500, is going to the Lelia Stakes, and Mossendale will head up to Sydney. There's a 2,000-metre group race up there, and we'll have Serenade the Stars at Bendigo. So I'm stretched to the limit, and it's going to be hard to coordinate that as it is, let alone having illustrious lad in Dubai as well.
Has he made the trip?
Awesome. He's travelled sensational, lost minimal weight, probably less than what he did last year, and he lost, I think, 8 kilos last year, and I think this time round he's lost 5. So he's travelled enormous.
Well, that is good. Now, last year he ran a slashing race. We've got Vedora in it as well. Have you had a look at how the race is shaping up this year?
Look, I haven't had a close look, Michael, but, you know, it's going to be competitive. Blue Point's the superior horse over there. And the Aussie horses this time are a little bit more credentialed than last year. So, you know, we finished the best of the Aussie runners last year, and it was a very, very pleasing run. On the world stage, and look, you could argue that the horse is not going as good as what he was last year, but in saying that, you know, we're there to represent our country, and we're doing our best.
And you got an informed jockey, Anthony Darmanin, as well.
He's on fire, the lad, isn't he? What a month he's had. Good on him.
Yeah.
He's a very dear friend of ours, and, you know, he's a jockey that's ridden the most winners for us out of any jock. We've supported him when we were sort of fledgling trainers working through the ranks and likewise, and we're forever grateful for his efforts. And there's no prouder person in the racing game than me to see him be a Group 1 jockey and win the All-Star Mile you know, consecutively on a horse that could be our next superstar.
No, there's no doubt about that. Now, you've got some interesting runners coming up, but you've got one trialling on Monday at Cranbourne, a filly called Sorority Lass. Oh, trialled last Monday, I should say.
Well, Michael, you don't miss much. You got a whisper on her, have you?
Well, my producer's telling me you must ask about this filly, so I want to know why.
Okay. Look, she's a well-bred filly, and we've been waiting for her to mature, and she couldn't have been more impressive the other day. She trialled very strong, very neat on the bridle. Reports from Matty Allen, who's a very experienced senior rider. It doesn't say a lot, but he was very jovial. Fingers crossed we've got another one coming through the ranks.
So when do we get to see her?
Good question. I think we've just got to work out whether, you know, we give her one more. We're just monitoring her over the next 24, 48 hours since that trial just to see how she comes through it. If we feel like she'll need one more, we'll give her one more. Otherwise, there's no reason why she can't go to the races and be ultra competitive wherever she goes.
Mark that down in your black book, punters. Sorority Lass, straight from the horse's mouth. While you're in a good tipping mood, what about today? One ball goes around at Ladbrokes Park. $9 chance.
Yeah, look, there's been a little key missing with him, and I think the tongue tie is going to be the key. He's had a couple of runs, and he just pulls up a little bit thick in the wind, but his horse is very fit in himself, and he's probably his own worst enemy. He gets on the steel a little bit too much, and I think the tongue tie will eliminate that today, and I'm hoping that he can just get a really nice run in transit and be able to have, you know, be able to breathe and be able to circulate his blood with the right amount of oxygen that he can give plenty at the end, because he just seems to have faded that little bit his last 100 to 150 metres because of that. And I'm looking for the edge there with the tongue tie.
Well, good luck today, Pete. And we can't wait to see Big Mal back. And we'll follow the progress next week of Illustrious Landover in Dubai as well.
Thank you.
Batman said, I'll take the run, and races from the inside, takes the lead. Three lengths away was Back on Lava, then followed by Kenya Connor. Well back behind it was So It Goes. Last of all was Equilibrium down the back straight. And Robin says, Holy Galaxy, as Tornado Tears burns off the back in 29.64. We've got a track record coming up. In behind it was West on Bamboo, Back on Lava, Kenya Connor around the corner though. Tornado Tears, sparks are flying here at Cannington. Stops the clock, 41.27. Wins by 15 lengths. Second Back on Lava, Equilibrium in behind it.
Well, that was just phenomenal. Tornado Tears winning by 18 lengths and breaking the track record by 7 lengths in his heat of the Perth Cup at Cannington last week. And a man who's been talking about how good Tornado Tears is for a long time is Mick Floyd. I think even Mick was staggered with that performance. How are you, Mick?
I'm still in shock, Mick. It was a late race on Saturday night. He went around at midnight, but it was well worth staying up for. That run was just something else. You heard in the call there, as he picked up the call, they picked up the call as it went past the winning post the first time. He just drawn level with the early leader, and then he just took off. That's what he does. He's got an amazing acceleration, and geez, he hit the line. If you watch him in full stride, he is something to behold. It's just an effortless stride, and the time speaks for itself. Nearly 7 lengths off the track record. It's just extraordinary. We've run out of superlatives for him. You know, he's a greyhound that's obviously had a heap of ability. Around this time last year, he was lining up in a launching pad. And since then, he's a four-time Group 1 winner, of course, Sandown Cup win along the way as well. He missed 5 months with a hock injury. This is only his fourth run since then. So to see how far he's come in that time is just amazing. And given he's only just turned 3 years of age, we're going to see him around for a lot longer as well. He doesn't have a stud career coming up. There's not an option for him, so he'll be racing as long as he's keen. And if he can, well, he's got 600,000 prize money to his name now. He's got 100,000 at his beckoning in the Galaxy on Saturday night, and who knows what he could achieve there. The staying calendar is a very strong calendar from here right through to August, and he could well be. In fact, I think he will be our next $1 million greyhound.
Well, he's $1.15 in the Galaxy, and of course the other features the Perth Cup on Saturday night. $1.15. How will anyone get close to him?
Oh, he's got to fall over twice, probably. That's the reality of it. He's just that much better. The one weakness in his racing pattern now is that he is mad keen for the rail. Mm. So having upcoming with box four, he's going to want to get to the rail at some point. But given just how dominant he was, obviously he's very keen on the track. He trailed there the week prior over 600 metres and went within a half length of the track record over that distance as well. At some point, that run's going to open up for him. He didn't have any luck in the Super Stays at the Australian on Australian Cup night, but this field doesn't have the same amount of depth, and the way he found the line, look, he's going to get a clear run at some point. And even if he does find a little bit of bad luck early on, he's going to be good enough to overcome it, and I think $1.15 is just money for Jam.
Is he the most popular greyhound in Australia?
No question at all at the moment. Probably him and Poke the Bear. They're two very similar-looking dogs. White dogs by Fernando Bale. We posted the replay on our Facebook page on Sunday morning, and the numbers are just extraordinary. People have gravitated to him, and I think it's a combination of his brilliance and what he can do with the times he's running. You see some dogs that win a lot of races but don't run particularly fast. He's got the track record at Cannington. Obviously, he's run the second fastest time ever at Sandown Park. He's run the second fastest time ever at the Meadows, and he's just a beautiful dog to see in full stride. It's poetry in motion, and no surprise that he is the most popular dog in the country.
And you mentioned that he's a mad rail these days, and that's probably the only thing that gets him into a little bit of strife in his races. Why is that? Why has he got that quirk?
It's a good question. I asked Rob Britton yesterday, actually. We had a meeting and asked where that's come from. He's always been pretty keen for the rail, but ever since he's come back from his injury, for whatever reason, he's decided he's a bit more keen for the rail. He went through a little period there around about Sandown Cup time last year where he was starting to take runs between runners and go around dogs, but I think he's always gotten too smart. He knows at some point the run on the rail is going to open up. We've got a slightly extended arm that they chase now, and it tends to get dogs off the track a little bit. So for that hard railing greyhound, Poke the Bear is another that races in a similar way. If they can get to the rail at some point in 95% of races, they'll get that run and they're strong enough to get through. So I think he just likes to take the short way through, and it's the fastest way around when he's stuck to the paint. And just a little quirk he's picked up. But as I said, he's just that much better than the others. It's particularly with the stays as well, because they do get a little bit tired towards the end, and they can roll off the rail, and because he's just warming up, he can usually poke through and win. So, look, it is a small concern, but as I said, he's that much better than everyone else. I don't think it's too much to worry about.
Well, he'll be going around at Winks Odds on Saturday night. The other feature is the Perth Cup final. We've got a short price favourite here, not quite as short. Orson Allen, even money after winning the heat in the fastest time, and this was pretty close to the track record as well.
Yeah, he got within a half length. He's absolutely fly, of course, coming off a Horsham Cup win at his start prior at Group 2 level, broke the track record down there. The trainer, Corey Granfield, took a different approach with him. His record is exceptional, unless he gets on a plane and he just doesn't travel particularly well. So he took a slightly different approach this time and sending over a little bit earlier. He went last Tuesday and just gave him a little bit of extra time to settle in. And look, he was extraordinary. He jumped straight to the front and went within that half length of the track record. He went about 5 lengths faster than the next fastest heat winner. So it just shows how well he's going. He's the best sprinter in the country right now. He's coming with box 7 in the final. I think the $2 maybe just a little bit short, although he has got Campini on his inside, the local, I'd say he's a local star, but we talk about 280 tiers wanting the rail. This dog will carve hard left. He doesn't just sort of crash the rail. He turns left and runs straight at it. So also, I should get a pretty clear run there. He's got Western Orgy on his outside, who was a very good heat winner as well. The reigning West Australian Greyhound of the Year, the Nationals winner, is a high-class greyhound. He's won 23 of his 35 starts at Cannington over the distance. So very, very capable greyhound, but if Orson Allen does get the clear run, he'll be hard to beat. It is a very hot field, though. Hector Bale, the Australian Cup winner from last year and a Perth Cup finalist last year, he's drawn the red, and that's just going to suit him beautifully. If he can avoid that early trouble, he's not going to go from the rail, so he's going to bump there in the finish. And Hasten Slowly is another greyhound that has plenty of class as well. This is his 8th Group 1 final. He has one win to his name. He's been placed in several others. One that does get around at a reasonable sort of quote, so but definitely want to keep very safe. He's around about the $10 mark at the moment and does seem pretty good each way value. But and Donna Patty on his outside as well, we know how good she is. She's coming off the Australian Cup win this year, and she found a bit of trouble in her run, but managed to find her way through, and was a very good winner. So this is a very hot final. Orson Allen does deserve his favour, but probably just a fraction short from one at the $2 mark.
Alright, what about locally tomorrow night at Sandown? We've got the launching pad qualifier.
Yeah, it's a really nice little race, this one. The launching pad is, for those who don't know, it's a sweepstakes event along the same lines as the Everest and the Thoroughbreds. It's a $2,000 entry fee. There's 64 spots up for grabs, and the series is worth $432,000, culminating on the Thursday before Good Friday. This is a little qualifier we put on for Greyhounds with 1-4 wins, so a few really good up-and-comers here, and a lot of these will go on and contest the launching pad. The winner of this race picks up a free entry in, so nice little form guide there. A few nice ones to keep an eye out for. Spearhead was a really good win last time. In fact, he's won three in a row now. Ran 29.56 last Monday and was a really good run. Given he missed the start and had to work pretty hard, it was a nice win. And one that I think that has a very big future. Global Impact was a good win. A couple of good wins at Hillsville, and I think he's just starting to mature into a really nice type. So couple of really nice races there. There's a couple of other greyhounds engaged on that car that will also be heading towards the launching pad. Pretty much all the field in the first race. Olsen Bale and Zinning Norton do look like two good types here in the first. And if you wait till the last race, there's a good dog there coming down from New South Wales, Double Black. His form is a little bit better than what it reads. Trialled here last Wednesday in the care of Peter Ligociani, who, of course, won the race last year. Beast Unleashed is one to keep an eye out for in the last event, race 12, number 3. But a couple of other good races there as well. A really nice 595 metre race featuring Poke the Bear from the red. He's got Dinah Chanter from the red, from the pink, and Blue Striker, a very good dog, drawn box number 4. It's a really hot field, but Poke the Bear, he really needs the red box now, and his last two wins over the middle distance has been extraordinary. So I'd expect him to go around a pretty short quote, but will be very hard to beat. And keep an eye on the clock, which is also very important given the speed star isn't far away as well. So Poke the Bear is the one to keep an eye out for on Thursday night.
Sounds like a great meeting, Mick, and another big weekend of racing in the world of greyhounds. We'll speak next week.
Will do. Thank you very much.
Mick Floyd. Now, I've just got the Mornington Cup field handed to me, and David Brydoke's changed his mind after originally thinking that he wasn't going to run. He's had a look at the acceptors and thinks that it's not that strong a race, so he's going to have a roll of the dice with self-sense. There is a field of 13. Number 1, Trap for Fools, Barrier 6, Ventura Storm 12, self-sense 8, Midterm 5, Stars of Carrum 9, Tarquin 4, Cinderwin 1, High Bridge 13, Gardini 7, Hangman 3, Mr. Clarify 2, Khartoum 10, Alienated number 11, or Barrier 11. Mornington Cup, of course, last year, Kings Will Dream. You win, you get a free ticket into the Caulfield Cup. I think that's why Stars of Carrum is heading that way for Robbie Lang. That's on Saturday. Final fields for the Group 1s haven't come through as yet at Rose Hill. We'll get Nadia to give those to you throughout the winners' program. That's the end of me. Tomorrow we will continue to speak to all the major players building up to the Group 1 weekend, both at the Valley and at also Rose Hill. We'll also catch up with Matty Welsh and Mickey Guerin. Until then, good luck if you're having a punt today.